friends. Welcome back to Anti-War Radio and Chaos 95.9 in Austin, Texas. Continuing our RAN coverage with IPS investigative reporter Gareth Porter. Find all his IPS archives at antiwar.com/Porter. He also writes for the Huffington Post and the American Prospect, among others, and joins us just about every week to keep us up to date on the lies about Iran that our government keeps attempting to use to get us into a war with that country. Welcome back to the show, Gareth.
Thanks, as always, Scott. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on, and it's always good to read your articles. And you're just a sieve for these details. Nothing gets by you. It's been about a year now that since I first interviewed you, and it's been, I don't know, 15 or 20 interviews or something so far. And when it comes to our government's lies about Iran's nuclear program, diplomatic relations with them, various peace offers that have been declined, the burnt offering, as you wrote in the American Prospect, when it comes to the lies about the EFPs and who Iran is backing in Iraq, all these things, the NIE, you've been doing just a great job covering this story. And you've been out ahead of everybody else on this stuff, and this current article is just another example of that. Did Bush get new Iran intel last winter? The media is saying, oh, well, Bush knew about this even before he was making the provocative statements about Iran could cause World War III by having the knowledge to make a nuclear weapon and so forth. That you're asking this article whether Bush knew for certain that Iran did not have a nuclear weapons program as early as last winter. Please explain.
Well, you know, I freely admit that I do not have high-ranking intelligence sources. Those are the people who have been briefing the press since December 3rd on the background of the NIE. And, you know, there are a couple of interesting indicators, I would say, that they are not telling the full story. I mean, they, for one thing, the stories that have been coming out since December 3rd have very carefully kept Vice President Dick Cheney's name out of the stories, even though we know from Cy Hirsch that Cheney was very active in late 2006 in keeping the NIE that was already in draft form bottled up because it was telling a different narrative from what the White House wanted.
Right, or of course, the next act there.
The Dick Cheney is the one in the White House who is responsible for, basically watchdogging the intelligence community, making sure that they're not going off in a different direction. So clearly, that's one indication that the high-ranking intelligence officials who have been briefing the press have not been telling the full story. The other part of this that was clear to me early on is that there was a connection between the defection of a high-ranking Iranian defense official, Ali Reza Asghari, and the new development that led ultimately to a very different NIE from the one that was in draft late last year. So I was trying to find more information about that connection, and Phil Giraldi, who of course writes for antiwar.com, is republished in antiwar.com, gave me the story based on his intelligence sources, which was certainly turned out to be quite accurate in the past on the work on the NIE, saying that Asghari was indeed a key element, a key component of the case that was made ultimately for the fact that Iran did not continue to work on any weapon-related nuclear work in 2003. The discontinued
okay, now,
that work 2003.
So what you're saying is Philip Giraldi, who actually originally broke the story about the suppressed NIE in October for the American Conservative Magazine, October 2006, that he is now coming forward and telling you that this high-level defense ministry official from Iran who defected had supplied information to the United States key component, that his information was a key component of the conclusion in the new NIE that they had given up any pretense of a nuclear weapons program the Iranians had back in 2003. Is that right?
That's correct. The story as it now begins to emerge is that what Asghari supplied was some clues that there had been a fundamental decision made in 2003 to alter the mix of programs. Now, again, we've talked on your show in the past about the idea of a nuclear weapons program as defined by the Bush administration may not be, you know, the same as what would normally be understood to be, the definition of a nuclear weapons program. But there was some kind of work that was being done, which, is what may be theoretical in nature. It certainly never got to the point of, what we would normally think of as a nuclear weapons program. But in any case, whatever work was being done, Asghari was aware that there was a change in that policy, and he was able to tip off U.S. intelligence after he had gone to Turkey. And this is a new detail, by the way, that he did, in fact, escape to Turkey and remained there. He was, according to Giraldi, he was enlisted by Turkish intelligence, not by U.S., not by Israeli, but by Turkish intelligence, even though the Turks apparently were passing on information that they got from him to the United States as early as 2003. Now, this, of course, raises the question as to whether the Turks had gotten information from Asghari much earlier about the change in Iranian policy, and that's a question which remains at this moment unanswered.
That is very interesting. If he's, working for a foreign power, while he's still working for Iran, if he's spying, and it turns out that he's the guy who had all this information debunking the idea of a nuclear weapons program, this year, then it would seem, to be a very reasonable question of just how much he had told them along those lines before he ever defected.
Yeah, I think clearly what happened was that he tipped them off with some fundamental information, and he also supplied some keys to being able to corroborate that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I have in my story about that corroboration is the suggestion from Gary Sick, who was the key Iran specialist for the National Security Council of the United States during the Carter administration.
He's the guy that wrote the book October Surprise, right?
That's right, and also All Fall Down. He's been writing books about U.S.-Iran relations for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And he suggests that what Asghari was able to do was to tell U.S. intelligence what to look for in electronic communication. In other words, it's a vast, universe of stars out there, and without having some information to go on as to what to look for, it's very easy, if not almost inevitable, that they will miss the key signals in all that electronic information. So Asghari was able to steer them towards, the right questions to ask, the right things to look for.
Right.
And the other thing is, according to Giraldi, Asghari was able to give them new information that helped them to intercept new information, new electronic communication that would not have been available otherwise. So he was a critical element in this, but then they were able to corroborate the information he gave them over the month beginning in February, March of this year. And that's why it did take longer to finally arrive at an NIE in midsummer or late summer of 2007. I mean, obviously, they were both having to find the new information, having to track down corroborating information. And then, as we know, in large part, because of Cheney in the White House challenging them and arguing, well, this must be an Iranian deception campaign, they did, in fact, have to go much farther than they would have otherwise to come up with the corroboration to show that absolutely they know that this was not any deception campaign.
Mm-hmm.
These intercepts showed that they had the goods on necessary to make the case that there was indeed a fundamental change in 2003.
Wow. Yeah, that Dick Cheney really is a conspiracy kook, isn't he?
Well, yeah. I mean, Cheney's not only an individual with a conspiratorial mind from the right, he represents, I think it's clear, a much wider conceptual framework of a much wider consciousness on the part of the right wing in this country, which, you know, I'm ready to say now, is a neo-fascist mentality. These are the people who basically believe that the intelligence services of this country should simply serve the interests of the war party in power, and that anything that they say that challenges that is therefore a conspiracy by the intelligence community mm-hmm. in league with foreign powers, basically, you know, sort of bowing down to foreign powers to stand in the way of the plans that that the neo-fascist right in this country have for making war against Iran.
We're an empire now, and we create our own reality.
Exactly. I think what I want to do next is really to sort of have a conceptual framework in which to understand the relationship between the right wing in power in this country, supported by those the right wing conspiratorial people, starting with Norman Podoretz and all the rest, who argue that the intelligence services have no right to have an independent analysis of what's going on. They should and must bow down to and serve the power interests of the right wing in power in the United States.
Yep. And, it's really too bad, too, when conspiracy theories traditionally are against the more hawkish, tendencies of the government. The worst of their excesses are the things that people usually come up with conspiracy theories about. In this case, it's the worst of the excesses are the ones coming up with the conspiracy theories to explain away anyone opposed to what they want to do.
Well, I would argue that there's a there's a psychological projection going on here, which is that the neo-fascist right in this country, which in effect has carried out a coup to seize power, they've subverted the Constitution, as Dan Ellsberg argues very eloquently. Not once, but twice, they have different waves of sort of assuming power, of seizing powers. That belong to the American people, they project their own conspiratorial seizure of power to show or to argue that the intelligence community has tried to do the same thing or has done the same thing.
Right. And now, let me ask you about that. We're running an article today on antiwar.com by Saul Landau. It's a counterpunch piece called Is the NIE Bush's Watergate?
Mm-hmm.
And he makes the analogy that, here Richard Nixon brought all these guys in from California, and they started doing, their own thing to too much of a degree, getting out of control. And they were very relieved that Mark Felt came out and started giving the scoop to Woodward and Bernstein, and that they were able to, that the establishment was able to check Nixon's power by exploiting his corruption. And he was making the comparison, I guess his interpretation, this guy Landau, was that this wasn't just the CIA fighting back and saying, no, we insist on telling the truth so that, the next war isn't blamed on us for lying the people into it again, but that this actually represents even the establishment itself, the real money establishment in this country, fighting back against the neoconservatives, who frankly aren't rich, right? I mean, the neocons are a bunch of intellectual egghead types. I mean, I'm sure some of them made some commissions from some Lockheed trades and so forth, but they're not the power elite.
They're certainly not the economic power elite in this country. They do not represent corporate interests. I think that's a key point, which I agree with. I'm not sure that I would agree so clearly, so sharply, with the idea that the NIE itself was consciously part of a broader political move against Bush. I mean, I do believe that the intelligence analysts who made this NIE are really very walled off from politics in the country, and I think only because of people like Phil Giraldi, who have come out of the intelligence community and who are still in touch with them, can we get begin to get an inkling of what's going on here in the conflict between the intelligence community and the White House. So I would not go as far as Saul Landau in that regard. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that this is, in fact, the culmination of a 30-year struggle between the neoconservatives, not just the neoconservatives in, who, you know, in a technical sense, that, you know, the, that came out of the old left, Trotskyists and so on and so forth, but Republican politicians like, you know, Rumsfeld and Cheney, who, you know, really do not come out of that sort of background, but who are opportunistic Republicans who saw an opportunity to seize power in the mid-70s and aligned themselves with, you know, the people who are, you know, perhaps more technically neoconservatives, to carry out their policies once they came to power, well, when they were in power in the 70s and again in after 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is the culmination of a 30-year conflict between those people and the intelligence community, who were, they were in their way in the mid-70s. They were able to muscle them aside then. They began to muscle them aside in after 2001 and 2002, but they stumbled, you know, because they, because of the WMD issue, the intelligence community was resolved not to let that happen again with Iran. And I think that's really the storyline that explains this this standing up against the White House in 2007.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now back to the indications that they've known about this, that Bush and Stephen Hadley and the highest levels of power in the White House have known about this new intelligence debunking the idea that Iran was secretly making nuclear weapons since, what, February or March of this year.
I think that the first intelligence had to come in February or March because of the fact that the White House, the President, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, and the National Security Advisor all get the same presidential daily brief.
Now, that for the audience, you remember Bin Laden determined to strike inside the United States? That's the presidential daily brief.
That's right, exactly. And it is manufactured. It is written by, at the Central Intelligence Agency the night before and presented to the president first thing in the morning the following day, representing the key developments in intelligence, new intelligence, and any analytical statement about its importance, which are you know, provided by those people who are responsible for the presidential daily brief each day and each morning. So in my story, I quote Ray McGovern, who, of course, also writes regularly for antiwar.com. He is a co-founder of the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and is also the one who was responsible for the for briefing President Nixon in the early 70s, mid 70s. So he's a specialist on the daily brief, and he was the one who told me that the same brief goes to the National Security Advisor, and now that's Stephen Hadley. So he knew what was being briefed to the White House in the early 2007 when this information from Asghari became available and certainly was briefed to the White House when it did become available.
And Ray McGovern told you as well that it's inconceivable that this information would not have been in the PDB. It's not like Mike McConnell and the intelligence community were waiting until the NIE was finished before they let Bush know about this.
That's right. I mean, it had to be briefed to the White House as soon as it became available. And this is very important information, very important intelligence. Even before it becomes part of the NIE process, it would have been briefed to the White House. So that's why I think we can be safe in believing that this is the case, even though we don't have the smoking gun evidence at this moment that that's the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like a lot of strong indications to me. It's been basically almost a year, 11 months, since the White House began again. Remember, they tried to start this up in early 2006, and then they backed off, and then it was really a year ago that they decided that the lies about Iran's nuclear weapons program weren't going to be good enough, and they needed to take another tack. which was accusing Iran of backing America's enemies in Iraq. And this NIE, of course, had nothing to do with that. It was only concerning the nuclear program, at least the parts they declassified and let out. And ever since the NIE, all the talk has been about the nuclear program, and people are breathing a sigh of relief and saying, well, oh, good. You know, now that the CIA has debunked the nuclear weapons program, there goes the excuse for war. But, Gareth, you've been on this show for a year straight telling us that the casus belli that they're working on is blaming the deaths of American soldiers in Iraq on the Iranians. And we know that last summer, Nancy Youssef in McClatchy newspapers reported that Cheney was pushing to start the war against Iran by hitting some Revolutionary Guard posts inside Iran and getting the war started that way in the name of these EFP bombs supposedly being supplied to our enemies in Iraq. And here it is in this morning's Christian Science Monitor. A new Pentagon report continues to blame Iranian training and funding and arming of rogue Shiite militias in Iraq who are killing our guys.
Well, you know, first I would just observe, it's very interesting that the beginning of the Cheney move to propose a war against Iran over the EFP and other supposed Iranian interventions in Iran began in the spring. And this, you know, I think would be an indication that Cheney was frustrated not just by military opposition, which we've talked about in the past,
right?
But also then by the fact that the intelligence community was beginning to move towards the conclusion that Iran had indeed suspended any covert nuclear weapons program that they had had previously.
He was getting that PDB too.
So in other words, of course, Cheney knew what was going on, and he was adjusting his policy. Now it now appears, in large part, because he knew that an NIE was inevitably going to come eventually. That would show that that his argument about a covert nuclear weapons program and the need to attack Iran over that was going to be shown to be false. So this begins to deepen our understanding of the history of the Bush administration's policy toward Iran in 2007. I think now it's clear that there was a combination of things. It was partly clearly military opposition, which began to suggest that they needed to have a second string to their bow, which was the Iran's alleged intervention in Iraq as a casus belli. But then with the information that they had about the intelligence community's move towards a new NIE, he then, I think, focused much more clearly on the Iranian intervention the narrative over the Iranian EFPs and so forth. In the spring of 2007, so that's part of the background of this story. The other thing, though, the question of whether Cheney's position now in the White House has been weakened. I think that this story about the NIE continues to suggest that Cheney's position has, in fact, been become much weaker in late 2007 than it had been once the NIE came out. Partly, I believe, because the White House was determined not to have this story come out. They were intending all the time, I'm convinced, throughout 2007, that the key judgments would not be made public. And I think the real story here has just not been told fully, and is not, certainly the American people are not aware of, is that I think it is true that high-ranking intelligence analysts were threatening to go public themselves if the key judgments were not released to the public.
Wow.
And I think that's part of this 30-year struggle. It's the culmination of this 30-year struggle between the intelligence community and the people who are still in power right now in Washington.
So do you think that all accusations about Iranian EFPs aside, that it's just going to be too difficult for Cheney to get his way from here on out?
I think, you know, you can see signs all over the Internet and the media that the neoconservatives understand that the game is over as far as Iran is concerned, that they are not going to be able to carry out a war against Iran. the political, let alone military consequences of such a move would be incalculable. It's much more difficult to imagine that now.
Right.
In the wake of the story about the NIE. Podoretz's response, the responses of other neoconservatives, Bolton, the idea of, that this is an intelligence coup against the administration, all these are signs that they understand that their position has been irreparably damaged.
Well, now, is anybody going to, besides you, finally going to come out and completely and once and for all debunk the lie that the Iranians are backing America's enemies rather than America's friends in Iraq in the manner that the NIE has debunked the nuclear weapons program? Let's face it, anybody who's listened to any of my shows or reads antiwar.com on any sort of regular basis has known for years that there is no nuclear weapons program in Iran. The only thing newsworthy here is that the American people were finally told in a format where they could hear it. And the same thing's been shown. You've come on this show and documented how the military spokesmen themselves have backpedaled from these accusations against Iran, and they failed to prove a thing. Is the CIA or anybody else going to debunk this?
Well, I think there's still more of this story to come out. This is just the beginning of the story of what the CIA, the intelligence community, learned. And I think part of the story that will eventually come out is going to be something that we've talked about on this program in the past, which is that Iran is not a unitary actor. There are different factions, political factions, including, the military itself, which is undoubtedly not unified, but which has people within it who were probably more interested in ultimately having a nuclear weapon than many of the people within the civilian national security establishment in Iran. So I think part of the story that we will learn ultimately is that there was in 2003 a shift within the Iranian military national security elite between those who had favored ultimately having a nuclear weapon in the past and those who never wanted to have one in the first place. People who said, it is enough for us to be able to show that we know how to enrich uranium, and that in itself will be a deterrent. And I think those people were always in the game. They were always, in a position to veto a nuclear weapons program in the most meaningful sense of that term. But that the decisive point in the debate did not take place until 2003 for a variety of reasons. Now, you're going to hear the right argue, as you already have up to now, since the NIE came out, that the real reason that this happened was because the United States invaded Iraq and that the Iranians were afraid of us. And, no doubt that played into a debate that had many dimensions to it. But I think it will be shown that it's a much more complicated debate that took place, and the politics of it are much more complex than obviously the right wing is trying to suggest. But in my view, that is going to be part of the story that will eventually come out.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think it's clear from your reporting, if nobody else's, when your article Burnt Offering and the American Prospect and other stories along those lines, that it seems like in 2003 they saw a golden opportunity, really even 2001, 2002. They saw a golden opportunity in September 11th that maybe this is our chance to warm up to the Americans and be friends, since we have a common enemy in the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and so forth. Maybe we can normalize our relations with the United States. And our answer, Dick Cheney's answer to them, was to go to hell.
That's right, of course. That's part of this whole story as well, that the Iranians were perfectly willing to make a deal with us in 2003. They were willing in 2001, in fact, to do that. We know that they wanted to cooperate with the United States, and they saw that as the possible springboard for reaching a broader deal with the United States. When they were ready to cooperate with the United States on Afghanistan in 2001, all of that was possible well before the United States intervened in Iraq, invaded Iraq. So You know, there's so many ironies in this story, which the right wing, of course, remains completely clueless about, trying to show, you know, that it's trying to spin this to say, you know, the way to deal with Iran is military force, threat of military force, and when in fact we know that it's much more complicated than that, that Iran was interested in having a broad agreement with the United States, which would have clearly limited their nuclear program in a way that would satisfy the fears of the United States and other countries about a nuclear Iran.
Yep, and they continue to make offers like that.
Exactly.
Trying to make a deal with the Russians to enrich in a third country, even talked about a couple weeks ago. Let's move our enrichment to Switzerland.
This is still on the table, and in fact, you know, one of the consequences of this NIE, it seems very likely, although, you know, certainly not not inevitable, is that the attraction of serious negotiations with Iran is going to inevitably grow. You know, that is to say, it's going to be more and more difficult for the Bush administration to resist pressures for serious negotiations with Iran before the end of its term. Now, as I've said in the past, I wonder if Iran is going to be attracted to negotiating with the Bush administration, with a administration discredited that has no credibility, you know, with its own people, with the rest of the world. It's going to be difficult for Iran to take the bait.
Wouldn't it be funny if Rice's false accusation that they won't negotiate with us finally became true just because she said it so many times?
Well, I think it would be a great irony for sure. I think there was a time when the Iranians would have been very serious about wanting to negotiate with the United States. Yeah, I think it's going to be less and less likely as time goes by now.
All right. Well, I really appreciate your insight, as always. Everybody, Gareth Porter is an independent historian. You can read what he writes at IPSNewsAntiWar.com/Porter, The American Prospect, The Huffington Post. Thanks a lot, Gareth.
Thanks very much, Scott.